More than 20% of Americans live with a disability. And over the course of our lives, by the time we're over the age of 80, more than two-thirds of us will have some sort of cognitive or physical impairment. Yet it's estimated perhaps as few as 2% of practicing physicians know what this is like. We will hear from a guest who says this can result in people with disabilities not getting the care they should. And we'll wonder if this has been your experience. Do you think more should be done to recruit and accommodate more doctors with disabilities? Would more doctors with disabilities be better equipped to meet the medical needs of their patients with disabilities? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our first guest this hour is Dr. Dhruv Kular, a physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital and researcher at the Weill Cornell Department of Healthcare Policy and Research. He is a regular contributor to the New York Times, for which he recently wrote the piece Doctors with Disabilities, Why They're Important. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
Thanks very much for joining us. So what inspired you to write this piece?
No, I think it was actually a few things that inspired me and got me interested in this issue. One is a very kind of personal issue in that my sister was born with a disability. She's a few years younger than I am, and she was born 3 months prematurely, and she ended up having cerebral palsy. And so she has some difficulty moving her legs, but is otherwise doing really well, and so she uses crutches to get around. And both my sister and I were born abroad, and my parents ultimately decided for our family to move to the United States, in part because of her disability, and in part because of this idea that was kind of enshrined in the Americans with Disabilities Act that people, even with mental and physical disabilities, they deserve the right to fully participate in all aspects of society. And so that was a big kind of impetus for my family to come here, and over the years has really been a big part of our life. And she's grown up to be a really remarkable person and just graduated from medical school herself, actually, and is now training as a radiation oncologist. So really it's been something that I've been interested in my entire life. And now as a physician myself, I see how issues of disabilities for patients affects the kind of care that they get. So often they're not able to get to hospitals, they're not able to get to clinics. When they are in healthcare environments, they're often treated somewhat differently because of our difficulty accommodating their disabilities, and ultimately I think it results in poorer care for them.
Why would it make a difference if we had more doctors with disabilities?
Well, I think a few things would happen. One is kind of in a physical way, in the built environment, I think you'd see some changes. So I think there would be differences in the way that hospitals and clinics were put together. We might have more accessible hospitals. We might have places that we can get around easier, people with either hearing impairments or visual impairments. There may be better ways for them to navigate their environments. But I think even more important than that would be kind of a cultural change. And so when you see and when you work with people who have certain limitations, it changes your perspective on people with disabilities. You see kind of, you know, what their limitations might be, but also what their limitations are not. And I think you treat them and you treat everyone around you in a different way because of it. So I think there's a lot that we can do to change both kind of the structural part of healthcare, which is the kind of physical environment that we exist in, but also the cultural environment, reducing some of the stigma around it, increasing how well we communicate with people with disabilities, training clinicians and staff to move them or communicate with them in a better way.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it is we have, as you say in the piece, as few as 2% of our practicing physicians with disabilities?
Yeah, I think it's probably a few things. And I should note that those 2% often develop the disability over the course of their careers. So even a much smaller rate than 2% actually enter medical school with a disability. I think part of the issue is maybe that people with disabilities don't feel like medicine would be an accommodating place for them. So they may not realize that there are many ways to address a disability in medicine. So, I have colleagues who have a hearing impairment, and people going through high school or college may not realize that there are amplified stethoscopes that can really help people with hearing impairments hear just as well as you or I could, or that there are ways to get around a hospital or clinic, or there are certain specialties in which might be better for them than other specialties within medicine. But I think medical schools and residencies also have to do a better job of making it clear that we do comply with the ADA. We will help you with the accommodations that you need. We invite you to join the medical profession and really reach out to students who of all different types of backgrounds, including those with disabilities.
Yeah, and how could they, you think that medical schools should do more to recruit and accommodate students who have disabilities?
Right, and I think one study, for instance, that I came across while I was doing research for this article was a study that examined medical schools' technical standards. Those are kind of the physical and the cognitive abilities that medical schools require for admission, and they generally post these on their websites. What the study found, though, was that most schools did have such a statement on their website, but many of those statements were hard to find. Only about a third of those schools explicitly said that they would accommodate disabilities. Less than two-thirds had information on who would be responsible for those accommodations, whether the student or the school would have to pay for them. And so there are a lot of things that are kind of in the culture and that don't necessarily make it an inviting place for people with disabilities. And I think schools should recruit just as they do for other underrepresented minorities. They should also be out there recruiting people with disabilities.
Our guest is Dr. Dhruv Kular, a physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital. He's a regular contributor to the New York Times, and he recently wrote the piece, Doctors with Disabilities, Why They're Important. And we are welcoming your questions for him and your own experiences. Do you think it's important that we have more doctors with disabilities? Do you think that would make a difference with the care of people or patients who have disabilities? Are you someone who has a disability, or does someone you know have a disability? What do you think about this? What's been your experience getting medical care? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. In just a few minutes, and after the news, we will be welcoming in a physician who lives with a disability, and we will find out how that disability has changed the way he treats patients or deals with patients. So, Dr. Kular, talk a little bit about how people with disabilities are treated differently when it comes to medical care compared to non-disabled individuals.
Sure. So I think there's a number of ways that this kind of plays out, and I can point to some research. It's not just necessarily my opinion that this is the case, but there are a number of studies that suggest that people with disabilities don't always have the same accommodations. They're not able to access health care as well as the rest of us are. But even when they do access that health care, they're often not getting the same type of care as the rest of us. And so there was a study that came out a few years ago that basically, researchers made up a fictional patient with a disability. They said that this person was partly paralyzed because of a stroke, and they couldn't get from the exam table or from their wheelchair to the exam table by themselves. So they called a bunch of offices, and what they found that about 20% of offices refused to book that appointment because they said that their building was inaccessible to wheelchairs. They said that their exam tables weren't adjustable, so they couldn't accommodate the patient. They said that their staff might not be trained to move the patient. So one in five offices refused to even book the patient.
Oh, boy.
But Many of the practices that did book the appointment, they ultimately admitted that they didn't necessarily have the equipment to move the patient. They would have to skip parts of the physical exam, and so there are issues with access there. And then other work suggests that people with disabilities don't always get the same treatments as people without disabilities. So a study, for instance, in the breast cancer literature compared how women with disabilities who have breast cancer are treated compared to women without disabilities. And they found that women with disabilities are less likely to get breast-conserving surgery rather than a full mastectomy. Oh.
Let me jump in because we do have news next, and then we'll be back. We are talking with a guest who wrote a piece that appeared recently in the New York Times, Doctors with Disabilities, Why They Are Important. Dr. Dhruv Kular stays with us as we welcome in another guest, a physician who was featured in that article, a physician who suffered a spinal cord injury during medical school. He has paralysis in his legs and uses a wheelchair. And we will hear how this has changed the way he cares for patients. And we will welcome your questions and your experiences for both of our guests. And we will wonder if you think we should have more doctors with disabilities. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome now Dr. Gregory Schneider, a physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. He was quoted in the New York Times article, Doctors with Disabilities, Why They Are Important. He also hosted a TED Talk titled Medical Education for the MedX Generation. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. Thank you so much for including me and for addressing this important topic.
Yes, it is an important topic. Thank you for joining us. Tell us what happened and what it was like for you as you became disabled while in medical school.
Absolutely. So I broke my back at the end of my third year of medical school in what was a hiking accident, and took a year thereafter to do some rehabilitation, but was left paralyzed below the waist. And at that time, really had to think critically about both what it meant to be a training physician, as well as what it meant to be a new patient. And as we mentioned in the article, that drastically changed my perspective on both what it means to be a doctor and a patient.
Yeah, well, how did that disability change your perception?
So I think one thing that became clear to me once I began navigating the hospital in a wheelchair was just how many folks have quote-unquote disabilities that are also our patients, and how few doctors are aware of some of the disabilities that patients have, how disabilities affect persons' ability to access healthcare, and what our conceptions of disability are sort of popularly within our general culture. I've started to think of disability in a slightly different way with regard to my own disability, and that is as differently enabled. So rather than thinking of myself as a physician with a problem, a limitation, a weakness, I've tried to think more of myself as someone who has an inability to walk and has many more strengths from that inability to walk, including an increased ability to empathize with patients in wheelchairs and elderly patients who have mobility impairments.
Yeah, I can imagine. But maybe you can give us an example of how this might change the way you deal with patients, especially patients with disabilities.
So I think the practical aspects of how it's changed the way that I interact with them is really when I kind of come into an examination room, be it in the hospital or in the clinic. Obviously, the patient is able to see my disability. I'm coming into the room in a wheelchair. And one of the first questions that I had when I came back to medicine was how that initial interaction would affect the way that I'm able to take care of patients, whether or not patients would really question my ability to take care of them as they viewed me in this chair. And our general conception of people with disabilities, for what it's worth, is that they may have a limitation in some way. That's obviously where the word disability comes from. But I think what has become clear is that people who now view me as their physician are able to see that I've interacted with the same healthcare system that they have, that I'm able to understand some of the non-clinical drivers of their healthcare as well, things like their ability to gain insurance, to pay for their care, what it's like to navigate a very complex healthcare environment. And I think that they're able to really appreciate the fact that I understand it takes a village of support of people to navigate through a medical condition, that it's not just a physician and their patient, but the patient's family and the healthcare system at large that's able to support their care. So I'm able to understand that now in a way that I wasn't able to before, and I think people are able to see that initially when I interact with them.
Well, as you know, Dr. Kular's article talks about how medical schools should try to do more to accommodate students with disabilities. What was your experience like completing medical school with your paralysis?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, first it came to the decision that I had to make at the end of my third year of medical school when I broke my back as to whether or not I would even go back to medical school, whether or not I would continue to train to become a doctor. And that was at first a difficult decision to make because of some of the insecurities that I had reentering medicine in a wheelchair. But I quickly learned that those insecurities were for naught, that I should not really have had them in the first place. I learned that, you know, the ability to take care of patients from a wheelchair was a strength, and that some of the physicality of being a doctor was from my own misperception of what doctors actually do. Some of the comments that have stemmed from the articles that were written recently about doctors with disability have addressed the fact that people really view their doctors as capable and these figures that might be able to jump in at any second and perform CPR and those sorts of things. And I quickly learned that my role as a doctor was going to be different in a positive way, that I would be more, quote-unquote, cerebral, that I'd be thinking critically about problems. And I definitely think that a process of dealing with my spinal cord injury made me more deliberative and adaptive, made me more creative in the way that I solve problems, both for my own mobility, but also for my patients' care.
Dr. Gregory Schneider is a physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. He, as you have heard, suffered a spinal cord injury while in medical school. He was interviewed for the New York Times article titled Doctors with Disabilities, Why They're Important. We also have with us the author of that piece, Dr. Dhruv Kolar, who is a physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital. And we are welcoming your questions and your own experiences with this. Perhaps you are disabled and have an experience to share trying to get medical care. Maybe you are also someone in the medical field who has a disability. Do you think that there ought to be more doctors with disabilities? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll be talking with both of our guests for the rest of the hour, and we do have callers who have questions or thoughts on this, so let's go to the phones. Dan in Baraboo is with us. Hi, Dan.
Hello there.
Hi there. What do you think?
First of all, I can't express enough sympathy for somebody who was struck in with a disability. I mean, plain and simple, life is not fair, but I don't think that the theme I'm hearing is that the medical school, it's kind of the medical school's fault that there's not enough people with disabilities in the system, but it's probably because it's not their fault, I don't think. It's just probably due to the fact that it's one of the most demanding schooling systems possible, and that's probably just what it comes down to. I don't think anybody's necessarily doing anything wrong and making it harder for anybody with a disability. It's just, it's unfair, and I'm sorry about that, but I don't think the system is broken per se, and that's the theme I'm getting out of this whole piece. And I can't commend those enough that have gotten through the medical school with disabilities, but I think it's probably such a small percentage of the big picture that I don't think it's worth really getting up in arms about.
Well, let's get a reaction first from Dr. Schneider, who went through medical school, or at least finished medical school with his spinal cord injury. He doesn't think that that it's the medical school's fault, that it's very demanding, and he can understand why there are so few physicians with disabilities. What is your thought on that, Dr. Schneider?
Absolutely. I mean, I think he raises a good point that medical training is incredibly demanding, and I don't think that should be a reason to dissuade people that have either physical or mental disabilities. I do think that medical schools and training facilities can do more to welcome folks with disabilities that they haven't done in the past. But I also think that there has been, you know, positive movement in the right direction of welcoming those folks. Some of the accrediting bodies have issued statements to help medical schools really figure out how to address applicants, for instance, who have disabilities. And I think that it's definitely a strength of the system when we're able to welcome people from all backgrounds and all levels of ability that are obviously capable of taking care of patients and are able to sort of address and respond to the rigors of medical training. I think that, you know, the point that our caller raises is that medical school is self-selecting, but what I think we can certainly work on is whether or not it is both self-selecting and welcoming. As long as it's welcoming of doctors and training with disabilities, then I think we're doing the right thing to augment diversity in our workforce.
Yeah, and Dr. Kular, what is your response to Dan's comments?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree generally in the sense that medical school is incredibly demanding, as is residency, and so there will be those pressures on people as they go through it, both with people who have disabilities or not. But once again, there are things that we can do to at least make it a more welcoming place for people with disabilities, so that if they choose to do so and if they have that desire to become physicians, that the path isn't harder than it needs to be simply because of their disability. And we certainly have made a lot of progress over the last 20 or 30 years, and the Americans with Disabilities Act was a big part of that. I have kind of older colleagues who told me that, 20 or 30 years ago, they weren't even allowed sometimes into residencies, or it was very difficult for them to get an internship at a hospital after they completed their medical school because they had a disability. And now that's not the case, but I think they're perhaps are more subtle ways that people are either discouraged or that they have more difficulty going about their days in medicine that we can still work on. And, I think having just a few people who have disabilities, whether they're nurses or physicians or other care providers, it really has a big ripple effect on the rest of the profession and a given institution. And so I think it's a really important part of how medicine should look going forward.
Let's thank you, Dan, for the call. Liz in Viroqua is with us now. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I am not a medical professional or disabled, but I enjoy advocating for people who go into doctor's appointments who either are disabled or are on so much pain medication that they can't think straight. So I go in and take notes and just make sure everything's going right for them.
Mm-hmm. And you
what
I think a lot of people like me could volunteer to do things like that.
Oh, I see. So maybe that is also a piece of the puzzle, Dr. Kular?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the more help that folks can get, and that's very generous of you to offer your time and your energy like that. I think often it is difficult to navigate the health system, and so I think as many advocates as we have, both within the medical profession and outside of the medical profession, the better. And I really, you know, commend you for the work that you're doing.
Yeah. And do you have a comment, Dr. Snyder?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I appreciate that comment because I think it gets to the point that, you know, a lot of the concerns about doctors with disabilities stem from this notion of patient and physician solely interacting and you know, developing a plan for patient's care, executing some of those items in that plan. And I think that what has certainly become apparent to me is the level of dependence, obviously, that patients have upon doctors, but also that patients have upon their support systems, and also that doctors obviously have upon their patients. And I think that, you know, the fact that we're able to have such support from callers like you is super important, so that we're able to execute on that plan of care.
Thank you very much, Liz. Let's go next to Mark in Antigo. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. What I'd like to share is that my doctor is disabled. And subconsciously, I realized it's a sometime in the relationship that I felt an extreme comfort and confidence in him. And I'm thinking, you know, I think part of that is his disability. It's like I felt like he could relate and genuinely, how should I say, interact on a personal and confident basis with me. And it made me feel extremely comfortable. And Terry Sullivan, I think he's a tremendous doctor.
Wonderful. Well, that's a great shout-out to Dr. Sullivan. And so, Mark, it was that way from the very beginning. You had no issues with having a doctor who had disabilities.
No, I had no issues in the beginning, zero. And like I said, as time went on, it actually built rather than distracted from.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that. And that's got to be music to your ears, Dr. Snyder.
It absolutely is. And I think, you know, that also highlights how patients can have empathy for their doctors, just as we expect doctors to have empathy for their patients. I think that it gets to the heart of the issue, which is that the patient and the doctor are the center of this team that is able to sort of develop a care plan for patients, and that empathy goes both ways. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And again, a minute before a news break, Dr. Kular, is there usually or not an issue with patients going to a doctor who has a disability?
You know, I'm not sure that actually has been well studied, and it would be an interesting to study what patients, how they view their doctors if they have a disability. What I will say is that more generally, patients of various backgrounds, they tend to feel more comfortable with physicians who are like them. And so it is the case that patients with disabilities often feel more comfortable with other physicians with disabilities. But I wouldn't be surprised if also patients struggling with any illness find doctors who have gone through some kind of illness or who have a disability themselves, if they find those types of physicians more empathic and able to be compassionate with them.
Dr. Dhruv Kular is a physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital, and Dr. Gregory Snyder is a physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. We are talking with them both about why doctors with disabilities are important, and we're welcoming your questions and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the importance of doctors with disabilities. We are talking with the author of a New York Times piece that is entitled Doctors with Disabilities, Why They're Important. And we are also hearing from a physician who was was quoted in that article. He uses a wheelchair. He has paralysis in his legs after a spinal cord injury during medical school. And we are welcoming your thoughts on the issue and your own experiences and wondering if you think medical school should do more to recruit and accommodate medical students with disabilities. Wonder if you think that our current medical profession is adequately meeting the needs of people with disabilities. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. In the article, it's pointed out that more than 20% of Americans live with a disability, yet only 2% of practicing physicians have a disability. They know only 2% know what that is like. And we're wondering what difference it might make if there were more doctors with disabilities. Let me reintroduce our guest. Dr. Dhruv Kular is a physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital, and Dr. Gregory Schneider is a physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. And let's see, we have more callers. Let's go to Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, good morning, Joy. I just started listening, and I was wondering if people have brought up the idea, because I was thinking about doctors that I go to and how I get really frustrated because they just don't seem to be, very empathetic, or they just think they know everything and I don't know anything. And I feel like maybe this is too much of a generalization, but I feel like people with disabilities could be more empathetic and more responsive to their patients. And that would be a big plus for me. So I feel like this could be a plus for patient care in general.
Well, I'm glad you called, Sarah. We didn't go into great detail on that, but Dr. Kular, that was, I guess that was a main thrust of your piece, wasn't it?
That's right. And I think Sarah, you're right in that, you know, obviously it's tough to make generalizations. There will be, you know, physicians with disabilities who are not empathic, and there will be physicians without disabilities who are. But I think generally any time, with or without medicine, whenever you've had a shared experience with another person, whenever you've known what it's been to go through something like they've gone through, even tangentially, I think it makes it easier to empathize with that person, to understand what they have gone through, what they might be going through, what kind of struggles they're having. And so I think that's one of the main points I was trying to make in the article, is that having more doctors who have had some kind of experience like that would be really beneficial, both for colleagues in the medical profession, but also the patients that we all care for.
Yeah. And Dr. Schneider, you think your living with your disability did make you more understanding of the needs of others with disabilities?
Absolutely. I think, you know, one thing that's also true is that, you know, my situation was of one who had this disability come upon him during his training, such that I knew what it was like to live without a disability beforehand and now what it's like to live with one. But to your point about deepened compassion, I think equally important are having doctors that have gone through that process, as well as doctors who have lived with a disability their entire lives. Because we have patients in both situations, those who have sustained disability due to other disease or trauma, as well as those who have grown up with it, like Drew's sister, I think having doctors of both sorts of disability in terms of the timing is an incredibly important way to deepen compassion in our field.
Yeah. Chris on Facebook says, I'm disabled. I have fibromyalgia. Then goes on to say the CDC cannot tell the Social Security Administration it's a disease because there's nothing that can be done about it. Maybe it's not officially declared a disability is what maybe that means. But Chris says that her or his doctor has fibromyalgia, and he gets it. Yes, doctors with disabilities are crucial. Any comment on that, Dr. Schneider?
Yeah, I think that actually brings up a great point about sort of definitions of disability, mm-hmm. and how we might think of disability as different or stemming from other medical conditions. And I think, you know, fibromyalgia is a great example because it can be a disabling disease. And we have to think about whether or not that means that the person who has fibromyalgia is disabled, because there is such a spectrum of symptoms that one can experience. So it is obviously a case-by-case basis. We can think of similar sort of situations, not even diseases, but portions of normal patients' lives, patients that do not have other medical conditions, for instance, that may be disabling, things like pregnancy and the outcomes of pregnancy, the sorts of symptoms that pregnant women can feel, as well as age. Obviously, we have an aging population, and aging itself can be disabling. So I think we need to think critically about what it means to have a disability. Obviously, my situation is slightly different with regard to spinal cord injury, but having doctors who've experienced all the things that I mentioned is incredibly important.
Any comment on that, Dr. Kular?
Sure. I think that's a really great point. The other thing that I would add is that, you know, we've talked a lot about disability and doctors allowing them to empathize with their patients, but I think there are actually very tactical reasons that people with disabilities might provide different or better care. So another physician that I spoke to over the course of this article was one with a hearing disability. So she had lost part of her hearing in both ears, and she uses a different type of stethoscope to listen to patients' hearts and lungs and another device to kind of amplify sounds. And what she said is that she's better at communicating with older patients with hearing loss, because she understands that when patients have hearing loss, it's not just they can't hear as well as other people, but their brain also starts to parse words and syllables in different ways. And so instead of just asking people to repeat themselves, she asked people to rephrase themselves, to say something a little bit differently. And that really helps her understand what other people were saying when she can't hear. And so she does that with her older patients who have hearing loss. So there's certainly a compassion part of this and an empathy part of this, but there's also very practical and logistical things that physicians with disabilities can do differently. And so having physicians who have experienced that kind of thing can be really helpful.
Yeah.
Joy, if you don't mind, I'd love to sort of comment on that. I think, you know, to Drew's point, when I was a medical student coming back into the field, thinking about what it meant to be a doctor with a disability, I was fortunate to do a project where I sort of canvassed other doctors with disabilities, asked them about what sorts of things made their work difficult and what sorts of things made their work easier, what compensatory strategies, for instance, they had come up with in order to do their work. And I think to Drew's point, one of the major ways in which doctors with disabilities of mobility impairment at least felt that their work had improved was through communication and that ability to empathize, as well as their ability to plan and manage their time, but mostly in order or as a means to communicate with the patients more effectively. To our caller's point, I think having doctors with not only mobility impairment but experience of other diseases is very important.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I was just reminded of bringing my mother into medical appointments when she was still alive. She suffered a massive stroke, and she was in a wheelchair, and she couldn't really communicate very well because the stroke had taken away her ability to speak. But the doctor was addressing me and talking to me and asking me all the questions. And while I understand why he did that, I think she felt, you know, like invisible, and, you know, and that she was even more helpless than she was. And I would think, Dr. Snyder, that you wouldn't do something like that.
I would hope not. Mm-hmm. I think that it's easy to marginalize patients when we are less able to communicate with them. And certainly what my experience has taught me is how to better communicate with patients who may not be able to communicate in the same ways that I've been fortunate to be able to communicate in. And Drew's article obviously speaks to folks with hearing impairments, but there have been another article actually recently came out in Slate by an author, Nathan Corman. reform in that talks about folks with visual impairments as well entering medical school. In my experience, I think that, you know, it would be difficult to communicate with folks with disabilities that are not similar to my own, but I'd be much more creative in the ways in which I would approach those situations.
Yeah, we have Tom in Burlington with us. Hi, Tom.
There's a tendency of many associations to try to keep the numbers of the membership down to keep their fees up. In other words, the plumbers, electricians, and they put in these sort of synthetic obstacles to people to get in and out of the association. The American Medical Association told Georgetown University Medical School, if they increase the number of, that they were going to double the size of the school. They said, if you do this, you're going to lose your accreditation. Now, this,
Tom, we're getting into something that I think is not really our topic of the day. I think Tom wants to know if, and I'm gonna make Tom's comment be, does the shortage of doctors in this country have anything to do with the shortage of doctors who have disabilities? Dr. Coulard, do you have a comment on that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
The shortage of doctors, how does that play into the shortage of doctors who have disabilities?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not sure that that is directly responsible or creates the problem of a shortage of doctors with disabilities. I think, you know, as our general population ages and people are living with more and more chronic diseases, we probably do need more doctors, especially more primary care doctors. Of all types, not just doctors with disabilities. I think the where doctors with disabilities are important are kind of changing some of the culture of medicine, also changing the way that we are able to accommodate patients within our practices and within our hospitals. But I think that's true regardless of whether or not we currently have a shortage or will have a shortage in the coming years.
We have just 30 seconds. Dr. Snyder, are you hopeful that we will see more doctors with disabilities in the medical profession?
I'm hopeful that we will. And I also think, you know, since Drew's article, I've received word from multiple medical students, people who are in pre-medical programs considering training in medicine, as well as doctors who have sustained injuries that have left them disabled. And that encourages me. I've spoken with a lot of doctors who have disabilities now, as well as a lot of folks with disabilities who plan to become doctors. I think that's a good thing.
I do too. And we'll have to leave it there. Thank you both very much for being with us.